Raise your hand if you've ever wanted to combine a Blade Singer with some Paladin levels in D&D. Well, today you are in luck, because that is what we're going to do with our character build this week. And spoiler alert, it's freaking awesome. Welcome to D4. Hey everybody, so here at D4, each week we take a deep dive into a character build for our favorite role-playing games. I like to crunch numbers about them, theorycraft about them, not so that I can tell you the right way or the best way to play a certain character, but to explore one potential way to build something in the hopes of creating a character that's both really powerful but also really fun to play. So if you enjoy creating characters for your favorite role-playing games almost as much as you enjoy playing the actual game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on how to build something that you're thinking about playing, then welcome home. This is where you belong, and I'm so glad you're here. So thanks for watching. My name's Colby. If you enjoy what I do here, I'd love it if you'd consider joining the channel as a member. There's a little button down there that says join. If you click on it, it'll tell you about all the little perks you can get as a member, including access to the library of write-ups that I do for each of these videos to help you recreate the character a little more easily yourself, access to the community Discord server, which is filled with lots of lovely and wonderful people, and even access to the monthly live Q&A sessions that we have. I want to give a huge thank you and shout out to all of my channel members. You guys are so great. I really couldn't do this without you. Thank you for your support. And for everybody else, thank you for your support too. Just being here, watching, liking, subscribing, clicking the notifications bell. These are all great ways to support the channel. You don't have to join as a member if you don't want to or don't feel like you can afford it. That's okay. You are awesome. So a few months ago, I did a video for Baldur's Gate 3. Yep. Take a drink already, that talked about how to mod the game and then how, using mods, we would build both a Bladesinger, my favorite subclass in D&D, and an Artificer. Check out that video here if you're interested. When I built the Bladesinger for that video, I did something that I've always wanted to do on a D&D build, but never have done yet, surprisingly, actually. Combine Bladesinger with some Paladin levels so we could smite. I mean, for my money, Bladesingers are the pinnacle of gishy spellsword goodness in D&D, and I've always wanted to make them really shine with some fantastic smitey goodness for incredible burst damage, because they have all of the spell slots of a full caster, right, which would just let you smite your enemies into kingdom come. But it's not easy to pull off in D&D 5e because of one very big hurdle: minimum ability score requirements for multiclassing. Now, in Baldur's Gate 3, combining Bladesingers and Pallies is no problem, because in that game, unlike in D&D 5e, there are no minimum ability score requirements for multiclassing, right? Regardless of your ability scores, you can multiclass any character into whatever class you want. That's kind of awesome, actually, and I love it. With D&D 5e, as most of you know, to multiclass into or out of a class, you have to meet a minimum ability score requirement, or two, sometimes, depending on the class, for each class involved, right? So for Paladins, you need at least a 13 in both Strength and Charisma, and for Wizards, Bladesingers, you need at least a 13 intelligence, and while yes, technically you could do all of that, if you wanted to have a decent constitution score and a decent armor class, and if you're playing a Bladesinger mixed with a Paladin, that means you're going into melee, right? And if you're going into melee, you definitely want a decent armor class and a decent constitution, then, well, you're kind of up the creek. You don't have enough points to get everything you need, right? There is, of course, one, and I think only one, way to get around this little problem: play a Tortle. Because Tortles, as everybody knows, are entirely peopled with criminals. No, bad, Vicini, bad. Tortles, as everybody knows, have that wonderful little feature called natural armor. But unique for races that have natural armor, the Tortles is a whopping 17. Most races with natural armor only get as high as 13, right? Of course, that 17 doesn't benefit from a dexterity modifier, but if we're playing a character who needs to dump their dexterity in order to get all of the other important stats they have to be at least decent, then it is a match made in heaven. And of course, one of the best things about the Bladesinger is that they can increase their armor in a way that doesn't depend on their dexterity, right? So Yeah, I think this is the one way we can make a smiting bladesinger in D&D 5e viable. Want to dive into how to build it? I do too. So let's jump in with D&D build number 163, the blade smiter, the smite singer, the smitey songblade. I like that actually. The oath of blade singing. All great suggestions. There were many more too. Thanks, Discord people. You're awesome. But in the end, I think I'm just going to keep this one a little boring. Sorry. Let's go with the smiting bladesinger. Huge thanks to my good friend Randall Hampton for the fantastic artwork that he did for this build. I think he captured it perfectly here. He does this every week. If you guys would be interested in following him on social media or reaching out to try and commission him to create some art for your character or maybe your entire party, I will put links in the video description, as always, on how to do so. And first, don't touch that fast forward button because you guys are really going to want to hear about this Kickstarter from today's sponsor, Hit Point Press. And I'm talking about my new favorite HPP project ever, the Field Guide to Floral Dragons, which launches on Kickstarter today, the day this video is released, April 2nd. You guys, it's going to be really hard for me to not get overly gushy about this book. I mean, everything that HPP puts out is pretty incredible, but come on. An entire book about dragons imbued with the essence of flowers in the spring? I can't even. Just take my money. This thing is just gorgeously illustrated by Kin Wald with over 200 pages full of dozens of new dragons and other pests, pollinators, and fungi, including not just stat blocks and traits, but detailed lore about origin, biology, and history, as well as field notes from floral dragon researchers to really help you bring these new floral dragons and other creatures to life vividly at your table. There's even a bunch of new magic items and poisons, and here, look, they actually sent me an advanced copy of the book because, I mean, they know it's going to be funded. It's probably like 10 times over their funding goal within the first hour that the Kickstarter went live. And this is not the finished product. That is going to look even better than this. But I've just been kind of like pining over this book for a few days now, and it's just the best. Let me just show you a couple of my favorites. Oh, the dandelion dragon, a 1/4 challenge rating dragon. Oh my gosh. Just adorable. The cherry blossom dragon. Oh, that's just gorgeous. Look at that. The hydrangea dragon. Ooh, I've got hydrangeas in my flower beds. They look just like that dragon. The magnolia dragon might be my favorite, though. Yeah, so cool. I am so in love with this book. So, yeah, you should totally go back this Kickstarter and help them hit their stretch goals and get some extra goodies that you can only get when you back them in Kickstarter. Don't delay. You're gonna forget, and then you'll be sad. When you go, please use the link that I've put in the video description down below so they know I sent you. Thank you. And yeah, huge thanks to Hit Point Press. You guys freaking rock. Let's jump into the build. At level 1, then, for our starting class, as with almost every Bladesinger build that I do, I think if you're going Bladesinger, you really want to start Wizard and get your important spells and features as soon as possible. Sure, I'd love to start Fighter, mostly for the Constitution saving throw proficiency, and maybe if I were playing this character in-game and not beholden to a Nova damage spreadsheet, I just might start Fighter 1 here for that reason. But no, we've got some burst damage to get done, and so we want both important Wizard levels and features and spells and a couple levels of Paladin for Smite by our first damage report at level 6. And that means, alas, no room for fighters. Yet. I don't think I'm supposed to make the sound effect there. As for our race, as I've said, yes, we're going Tortle because, yeah, while Tortles get a few cool features like claws they can use for unarmed strikes and the ability to hold their breath for an hour, shell defense, which might come in handy once in a while, the marquee feature here for us is natural armor, which tells us that so long as we are otherwise unarmored, we have an AC of 17. Though we don't get to add our dexterity modifier to that bonus, like I've said, no problem for us, as we've discussed. We could still benefit from a shield, but yeah, that's not really going to work for us either, as we'll discuss in a minute. So for now, 17 AC is not bad, and it will get even a little better. As for our ability scores, I'm going to assume that we're going the point by method, as always, and say let's go with a 15 strength plus 2, a 14 constitution, a 14 intelligence, and a 12 charisma plus 1 there from our racial. So yeah, I'd really love to get both our constitution and our intelligence intelligence higher on this character, but since we need to have that charisma at a 13 at least for Paladin, we're kind of stuck here. This means that, yeah, we're never going to be a really fantastic caster on this character, right? Some people like to play their Bladesingers as, like, wizards first, melee characters second. Longtime viewers of my channel know my feelings on that particular take, but just in case you're interested in getting a little primer or reminder on my feelings about Bladesingers in melee, check out this little short that I did a while ago here. Anyways, yeah, if you want to go that route and kind of be caster first, by all means, go for it. Prioritize intelligence over everything. I might not even take Paladin levels at all in that case, though, right? If you really wanted to, you could. You're not going to hit as often, but maybe it'd be nice to occasionally be able to bolster your weapon attacks once in a while when you're not focused on controlling the battlefield, etc., with your wizard spells, right? As for me, of course, I'm focused on the damage and attack aspect of the character for this build, so yes, starting with a 17 strength. I think this might be my first ever strength-based wizard. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong there, but I'm pretty sure. Anyways, as for starting equipment, I'm going to say let's go the gold buy route and just pick up, like, in addition to the usual necessities for wizards, like a spellbook, a couple of light hammers. Yeah, light hammers. So I guess we're going to be a little less of a blade singer and more of, like, a hammer singer. Not to be confused with MC Hammer, who, let's be honest, isn't all that great of a singer anyways. Have you seen her? Have you seen her? Tell me, have you seen her? Ooh. That's a deep hammer cut. Okay. As a wizard one, then, we get, first of all, arcane recovery. This lets us, once per day, after a short rest, recover spent spell slots equal to one half of our wizard level, rounded up, never higher than fifth level. Always handy, get more spell slots. As for the spells that we get here, first level spells, cantrips, nothing really out of the ordinary for this build here. Just keep in mind that, again, we're never going to have a great intelligence on this character, so taking spells that are going to depend on, like, our spell hit chance, or, like, saving throws against our spell DC, is going to be a dicier proposition.
Oh, okay, I see what you did there.
Magic Missile, then, is great for some guaranteed ranged damage. Sleep is nice in the early game, right? To just automatically put potentially multiple enemies to sleep. Silvery Barbs, of course. And then there's some nice, you know, utility-based things like Message, Detect Magic, but the ones I'll say we absolutely have to have here for this build are, first up, one of my favorites, Booming Blade. This cantrip lets us make a weapon attack as part of the casting of the spell, and if it hits, we do a little extra thunder damage, once we hit level 5 at least, and then if the enemy we hit moves before our next turn, they take even more thunder damage. We'll be getting a lot of mileage out of this little ditty on this build. We also want to grab the essential defensive spells, right? Shield, which raises our AC by 5 until our next turn when we're hit by an attack, totally overpowered, and Absorb Elements, which lets us have resistance to elemental damage when we take elemental damage. Fire, ice, lightning, poison, thunder. Both of those require our reaction, of course. Finally, yes, be sure to grab Find Familiar so that we can summon for ourselves a little pet, Owl, who can fly by and take the help action and grant us advantage on our first attack each round. Assuming that your DM uses familiars in that way, which most do at most tables, I know the rules as written are a little more finicky than that. And yeah, of course, it won't work once the enemy decides to try and use their own resources to kill our familiar, but that is, and don't forget, never forget, that is a win for us. Sorry, Owly, but it's true. You'll be okay. I can summon you again later, real easy. At level 2, though, wizards get their subclass, our arcane tradition, and of course, we're going blade singing, like I said. Oh, how I love this subclass. And, I mean, I haven't used him in a minute, right? Not since, like, the Moon Druid Bladesinger back in November, I think. It's been almost half a year. That doesn't feel too egregious. But as a bladesinger, we get a couple of great features. Training in War and Song gives us proficiency in light armor, which, as a Portal we won't use, but then proficiency in the performance skill, okay, and proficiency with one type of one-handed weapon, and yeah, we're going light hammer. The reason being that light hammers are both, well, light, so that we can dual wield them and do bludgeoning damage, which is important for us, as we'll get into in a minute. The only other weapon in the game that has both of those properties is the club, actually, but light hammers are just way cooler, I think. Plus, they have the thrown property, so you can throw them if need be, but yeah, feel free to go clubs if you want to go club. We also get the ability which gives the subclass its namesake here, the Blade Song. This tells us that proficiency bonus times per day. And as a bonus action, we can activate our Blade Song, which will, for 1 minute, increase our move speed by 10 feet. Nice. Now we're a speedy turtle. And both our AC and our concentration check by our intelligence modifier. That's really nice. I wish we had a higher intelligence modifier, but hey, a 19 AC is pretty decent, especially if we have access to the shield spell, right? Let me address this here. A lot of people are going to question whether or not we can cast the shield spell if we have a weapon in each hand without the warcaster feat, since the spell has a somatic component. At a lot of tables, mine included, you can drop a weapon as part of the reaction to cast shield in this scenario, then potentially pick it back up on your next turn as a free action, unless, of course, someone else picked it up or knocked it away, right? So there's a risk there. Make sure that you discuss this with your DM. If they won't allow you to do that, you will want to seriously consider just going with a single weapon on this character until you can get Warcaster. Or maybe, like, stowing a weapon at the end of your turn, then drawing a weapon at the beginning of your next turn. I realize that this means half of the time you'll have your hands full when you need to cast shield, but it might be a potential workaround to give you access to shield at least some of the time. It's clunky, I know. I hate the Warcaster tax. Oh, one last thing. Blade Song also gives us advantage on acrobatics checks. Anyways, I love the image of this, like, dancing, bobbing and weaving turtle swinging hammers. Maybe not as dexterous as your typical blade singers, but a lot more agile than most turtles. And that's just kind of a cool, fun, maybe even funny image. At level 3, we get second level wizard spells, and while there are lots of good and useful and important options here, there are two that I want to especially highlight, and I bet you can predict them. First up, yes, my darling, Shadowblade. I love this spell. I love the idea of summoning a shadowy, magical, ethereal blade that does more damage than any other non-magical weapon in the game. I love that it's light and has the finesse property, though we don't need that for this build, that it has the throne property even, and does 2d8 damage, 3d8 as a third level spell, and 1d8 more every two spell levels after that, right? And that we have advantage on attacks with it if we're in dim light or darkness. I don't love that it requires concentration, that it takes a bonus action to summon, and that it has to compete with magical weapons that you're probably going to be getting eventually, right? Meaning that it's not ever going to get, like, a better plus to hit, aside from us increasing our strength, or, you know, getting other magic weapons that might increase our hit chance somehow. And that, strictly rules as written, you can't Booming Blade with a Shadow Blade. Man, I really hate the way they changed that in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. Even though I know, yes, most of you still can Booming Blade with a Shadow Blade at your table, which I applaud. Yeah, Jeremy Crawford even said he would do it at his table, but rules as written, it doesn't work. So, do we use Shadow Blade anyways? I think sometimes. Maybe for you, most or all of the time. Maybe yes now, but later when you get like a +2 or a +3 weapon or a flame tongue, short sword, etc., then you stop using Shadow Blade, right? I like having the option, and I think that at least for now, it's a very good one. But yeah, I do get frustrated that it takes a bonus action to start our Blade Song and a bonus action to summon the Shadow Blade, and both only last for 1 minute. I'll repeat my whining about wishing that 5e rules allowed for or more non-resource consuming, or maybe reaction consuming buffs, but it is what it is.
It's what it is. What it is. It's what it is.
They wouldn't dare.
The other spell that I want to highlight has its own set of challenges and benefits that most of you know very well by now, Cloud of Daggers. I love that this spell does 4d4 damage both when a creature moves themselves into or are moved into the area of effect of the spell. Yes, either works, and also takes the damage at the beginning of their turn if they're in the area of effect. I love that the damage is magical slashing damage that gets no saving throw against it and makes no attack roll against AC. It just happens. I don't love that it's a pretty small area of effect, a 5-foot cube, though keep in mind that doesn't have to snap to the grid, right? So it could potentially cover two little squares if you're playing on a grid. And I don't love that it can't be moved by us after we cast it. I think that last point makes the spell much better in a grapple build like the Bardic Brawler, for example. I'm almost out of cards. Than in a build where you're pushing an enemy into the area of effect otherwise with a weapon attack or a spell attack. But if we can do that, push them into the spell effect semi-reliably, I think it's a strong spell that's worth considering. Do we concentrate on it instead of Shadowblade here? Or, I mean, Web for that matter, or other options that we'll get later? Again, that's going to depend a lot. It'll depend on how your DM plays their enemies, and do they play them differently if they're intelligent versus relatively dumb? Because, sure, if the enemy ends up taking damage by getting pushed into the cloud of daggers, how likely are they going to be on their next turn to stand just outside the area of effect more than maybe one time, right? My guess is not very often. That said, in a burst damage build, where we're really prioritizing just like one big round of damage, maybe, just maybe, it's a little more viable of a tactic than if we were pretending we could do it round after round in a sustained damage build that wasn't grapple focused, right? I'll do this. For this build, being Nova focused, I'm going to assume that we're going to use Cloud of Daggers with the hopes of getting at least one round where we can knock an enemy into it. I don't think it's a huge stretch for most tables and most encounters. If you disagree, that's fine. Concentrate on something else. Shadowblade is a great option here, I think, especially if you're in Dim Light or Darkness, especially if you can get the spell off before combat starts, or if you can get your Blade Song off before combat starts, right? Since I like to explore best case scenario situations, I'm going to assume a Cloud of Daggers tactic will work for us for a Nova round. The damage is going to be better than Shadowblade, though how much better will depend on enemy armor class and the lighting in the room. Feel free to go a different route if you want, and in that case, sure, feel free to use short swords instead of light hammers for the slightly higher damage difference in the weapons. Because, yes, the reason we wanted light hammers is because at level 4 we get our first feat and we are going to take Crusher, of course. This lets us bump our strength by 1 to 18, nice, and then tells us that once per turn when we're hit with an attack that does bludgeoning damage, we can push the enemy 5 feet in a direction of our choice, so long as they're no more than one size larger than us. They don't get to make a save against this forced movement, which is nice. Also, when we crit against them, attacks against them have advantage until our next turn. That's great. So yes, theoretically, we could now be pushing enemies into a cloud of daggers, doing damage to them when they enter the cloud and when they start their turn there, double dipping, which is awesome. Okay. At level 5, with our most important spells and that all-important feat under our belt, let's get some pally levels so that we can be smiting by our first damage report at level 6. Of course, you might want to hold off on doing this until you get extra attack from Bladesinger. If I were playing this character in-game, that's probably what I would do. But I'm going to prioritize burst damage on this build over everything else, and thus we will be better off getting to Divine Smite first as opposed to extra attack. It's a highly resource-intensive way to go, right? And it only makes us better for one round of combat per day, really. So yeah, it's going to depend on how you want to play, how many encounters you tend to get per long rest at your table, but in the interest of stretching the concept as far as I can, let's pretend we're going Paladin now. This would mean, as a Pally 1, we get Divine Sense, which basically lets us detect undead, fiends, and celestials a few times per day within 60 feet of us, not behind total cover. Marginally useful. Lay on Hands is more than marginally useful, though, giving us 5 Lay on Hands points per Paladin level that we can use as an action to heal for 1 hit point per point spent, right? Or if we use 5 of them, we can cure a poison or a disease. Very handy. Very lay on handy. Don't forget that we do get simple and martial weapon proficiency now, so if we wanted to start using something other than light hammers here, no problem, so long as they were one-handed, right? Or blade singing's not going to work. But Pally 2 is why we're really here, of course. So at level 6, this means that we're going to get a fighting style. Unfortunately, paladins don't get access to the two-weapon fighting style, a real shame, because I'd love to have that. And what I would consider to be a runner-up fighting style here, defense, only works if we're wearing armor. Maybe your DM would say that your natural armor counts for the purpose of this fighting style, but I don't think rules as written it does. In that case, I'd probably take either blind fighting to basically give us blind sense out to 10 feet, situationally, very useful, or interception, which lets us use our reaction to reduce damage to an attack against a nearby ally by a d10 plus our proficiency bonus. A pretty solid support feature that your friends will thank you for if you're often fighting shoulder to shoulder with them. We do get paladin spells here too, and as far as what to take, nothing crazier out of the ordinary here. Bless is great if no one else is packing it and maybe you're out of spell slots for Cloud of Daggers or Shadowblade. Cure Wounds is nice for some backup healing if you're out of Lay on Hands points, but you know, Pick your favorites. The real reason we're here, of course, is, yes, for Divine Smite, which lets us spend a spell slot when we hit an enemy with a melee weapon attack. And yes, no reason that Shadowblade shouldn't work here if you're using that, right? As we're told that Shadowblade counts as a simple melee weapon, and smiting with a Shadowblade is just the stuff that dreams are made of, as I tried to make good use of in the Assassin's Creed build a few months back. I think that was my last card for the week. But anyways, Divine Smite. When we hit, we can spend a spell slot to do an extra 2d8 radiant damage plus 1d8 more for every spell level we spend, capping at 5d8 damage or a 4th level spell slot. And keep in mind, speaking of spell slots, that since we're multiclassing with spellcasters, we do have 3rd level spell slots at this level, right? Which we will make great use of in our level 6 damage report. Okay, so let's discuss what combat would ideally look like for us at this level if we wanted to blow everything to just burst as hard as possible. Round 1, we would be starting our Blade Song with a bonus action and then casting Cloud of Daggers with our action, potentially as a 3rd level spell, ideally on top of our primary target. We'd then run up to within 5 feet of them, right? On their turn, they're going to take 6d4 damage from being in Cloud of Daggers and hopefully move up to attack us. If your DM constantly plays a metagamey tactics game against you and the enemy is always running away from you, even though you might be like the nearest opponent to them and concentrating on a spell that's hurting them, right? In those kinds of situations, then yeah, probably don't use Cloud of Daggers. But assuming that's not the case, on round 2, we go Nova. We make 2 attacks, one with our main hand hammer, which we should have advantage on thanks to our familiar, and one with our offhand, though the offhand doesn't have advantage, nor does it add our strength modifier because we don't have the 2-weapon fighting style, right? When we hit, we smite with both our remaining 3rd level spell slot, potentially, not saying that you should, just exploring the extent of what's possible, and then one of our 2nd level spell slots as well, pushing the enemy 5 feet back into the Cloud of Daggers, where they would take damage both right now and then again at the beginning of their turn, assuming they've survived, which they very likely may not have, because all told, if everything lands over that one round, we'll be doing a total of 14d4 plus 7d8 plus 4 damage. And thus, against an enemy with a 10 armor class here, we would, on average, do 75 damage, and against a 15 armor class, it would be 65 damage during our burst round. I mean, while sure, it's no Echo Knight, right? Ooh, I do not have any cards left, I don't think. That was last week's build. The thumbnail, it's right there. I mean, that's still really solid damage, putting us comfortably in the middle of tier 1 compared to other burst damage builds that I've done to date. Now, sure, sometimes you'll be fighting enemies who are huge or gargantuan. Level 6? I mean, it's possible. And so can't be knocked back, right? No problem. Use Bless or Web or, yeah, Shadowblade is great. Especially if you're fighting in Dim Light or Darkness. I mean, at that point, in Dim Light or Darkness, you're only a few points below our Cloud of Daggers tactic, damage-wise. Once you get into middling enemy armor classes, anyways, and at higher enemy ACs, you're about on par. And better yet, your sustained damage will probably be a lot higher going that route because you don't need to knock somebody into Cloud of Daggers every round, right? So, hey, great news. You're a wizard. You got options. At level 7, speaking of being a wizard, now that we've got Divine Smite, yeah, let's go back to wizard to get more and better spells and spell slots and other important blade singing features. So yes, that would make us a wizard 5 here, and that means the incredible, amazing 3rd level spells, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but pick your favorites? I mean, sure, Spirit Shroud for damage is a good option in case you get some amazing magic weapons and you want to use them, but still add a d8 of extra damage to all of your attacks, and the Cloud of Daggers thing isn't going to work. And then, of course, Counterspell, Fear, Hypnotic Pattern, Slow, Fireball, but keep in mind, we're sitting on a 14 intelligence, so try to focus on stuff that's just going to work, right? Spirit Shroud is one of those things. Other great utility options like Tiny Hut and Catnap are great. Fly, and I mean Haste as well, yeah. With its one more attack, that could add a smite, plus higher move speed and higher AC. Haste is definitely worth considering, depending on your weapons. Anyways, yeah, PYF. At level 8, we would be a wizard 6, and that means we finally get extra attack, but not just any old extra attack. No, we get the Bladesinger extra attack, which says that not only can we make 2 attacks when we take the attack action, but we can replace one of those attacks with a cantrip. And yes, that means we can Booming Blade and still make other attacks, and it's just so glorious. But I'll get into the details of why in our next damage report in a minute. Don't forget that thanks to multiclassing, we do pick up our first 4th level spell slot at this level too for bigger smites or more damage on Cloud of Daggers, etc. Okay, level 9. Now that we've got extra attack and 4th level spell slots, I think it might be time for that inevitable fighter dip. You knew it was coming. Stop complaining. And honestly, you don't have to do this. You might be crazy for doing it. Why delay higher level spells and spell slots? Again, it's because I'm trying to focus on burst damage, and while I'd love to be upcasting my spells and smiting harder, Action Surge outshines both of those things for pure raw numbers in a Nova round, so that's what I'll be doing. It's okay if you'd rather stay Wizard, or maybe even take more levels in Pally to get an Oath and another ability score increase or feat, right? We're going Fighter. For more than just Action Surge, too. Because Fighter 1 gives us Second Wind, sure, to heal ourselves a little bit as a bonus action, once per short rest. But more importantly, it gives us a fighting style. And while, yeah, we could get the two-weapon fighting style now to do more damage on our bonus action offhand attack, right? We could also take Superior Technique, which would let us pick up Trip Attack from the Battlemaster Maneuver list and use it once per short rest, fueled by a D6 superiority die, and yeah, with Trip Attack, we could now try to knock the enemy prone when we hit them, adding that D6 in damage, and then if they fail their strength save against it and are large or smaller, we get advantage on all of our attacks against them that round, not just the first one that we were getting thanks to our familiar. Woohoo! And yes, like always, to continue comparing apples to apples, I'm gonna assume that we've got advantage on all of our attacks going forward now, even though I appreciate that the enemy will sometimes make their save, and sometimes be huge or larger, right? At level 9, it is time for our next damage report. And we've seen some nice increases since last check. Better spell slots for more Cloud of Daggers damage and smites, advantage on all of our attacks now thanks to Trip Attack, and my favorite thing of all, thanks to extra attack, not only another attack and smite, but a Booming Blade attack, which is just so juicy, delicious for those of us using Cloud of Daggers especially. Because you see, now on our Nova round, we'll run up, attack with advantage thanks to our familiar, hopefully knock prone and smite on that first attack, right? And then offhand attack and smite, yes, but Booming Blade smite attack too, and not only will that apply an extra d8 of damage on the attack itself, but if we're pushing them into Cloud of Daggers, we've just created a new and improved catch 22. Kinda like that old build. Why did I use up all of my cards today? Thumbnail there. But even better, I think. So yeah, on the enemy's next turn, they've got to choose. Do I stay in Cloud of Daggers, taking damage, or do I move and take more thunder damage thanks to Booming Blade? Either option sucks, and that makes me so happy. I'm going to assume that the enemy is going to move, both so that they can be more effective in combat, and because, yeah, no one's going to want to just stand in a cloud of spinning daggers dicing them up, right? It is a thing of beauty. I'm going to assume that we're casting Cloud of Daggers as a 4th level spell, and then smiting them with all 3 of our 3rd level spell slots here. As always, not recommending that, just saying you could. And if you did, against enemies with a 10 armor class here, we would, on average during our Nova round, do 126 damage, and against a 16 armor class, it would be 117 damage. Which is like a 75% increase over last check, keeping us kind of still in the middle of tier 1 compared to other burst damage builds that I've done to date at this level. Sweet. And we're still mostly a wizard. Amazing. And we still have our biggest gains yet to come. Woohoo. Because yes, at level 10, we would be a fighter 2, meaning that we'd get the other main reason we wanted fighter levels, Action Surge, so once per short rest, we can take 2 actions on our turn. Now, here's the thing. You could, in the interest of more reliably bursting and getting your Cloud of Daggers thing going effectively, right on round 1, Bladesong as a bonus action, then cast Cloud of Daggers with your action, then Action Surge, and go make your 2 attacks, right? Using Booming Blade, knocking them into your Cloud of Daggers, never giving them a chance to try to, like, get out of it or run the other way. That's pretty awesome. That said, for pure numbers done over a single round. I mean, if we were okay blowing the spell slots and we were worried that we weren't going to be able to knock the enemy into Cloud of Daggers for whatever reason, the better round one move would be to just Spirit Shroud as a bonus action, run up and make two smite-infused weapon attacks, one with Booming Blade, then Action Surge and repeat. And if you did that, it would be a lot of damage. Alternatively, you could haste, make your one attack from haste and your bonus action attack, then action surge for two more attacks, right? Spirit Shroud's a little better there thanks to the fact that we're getting our main hand attacks on all four of our attacks, plus one more Booming Blade attack, right? But anyways, yeah, you've got options. I'll assume that we're still going Nova on round two because, well, it looks better on the spreadsheet. But oftentimes, just killing something before it gets a chance to even do anything right on round one will be better than doing even more damage to them but waiting around, right? But now that we've got Action Surge at level 11, let's go back to Wizard to get better spells and spell slots. This means we'd be a Wizard 7, so we can pick up 4th level spells. So yeah, I mean, Banishment, Polymorph, Dimension Door, Wall of Fire, none of which we're necessarily going to be planning on using during our Nova round, so BYF. Don't forget that Booming Blade jumps up to 2d8 on the hit and 3d8 when they move at level 11 too, which is awesome. At level 12, we would be a Wizard 8, and that means we get another ability score or feat, and I think we've got to bump strength here, increasing our hit chance, our damage, and even the DC of our very important trip attack. Don't forget that thanks to multiclassing, we get a 5th level spell slot too now for potentially even more Cloud of Daggers damage. This, by the way, was my final build when I played BG3 as a Bladesinger, and it just absolutely destroyed Wizard 8, Pally 2, Fighter 2. Though I was, for that playthrough, just using Shadow Blade and or Spirit Shroud, since Cloud of Daggers works a little differently and there's no Crusher feat. Anyways, it was awesome. Take a drink. At level 13, though, again, you might want to just stick Wizard for all the reasons we've discussed. You might want to go back to Pally for all the reasons we've discussed, but if we're trying to maximize burst damage, yeah, I want more fighter levels, because that would let us get our martial archetype, our fighter subclass, and that would mean we could be a battlemaster and have more superiority dice. Now, to be fair, Champion would actually not be a terrible choice here. Doubling our crit chance when we're rolling so many dice on a hit, thanks to Divine Smite and Booming Blade, it's not terrible. Nor would Rune Knight be a bad idea. Remember, we can only Crusher Feet push enemies who are one size larger than us or smaller, right? So with Rune Knight, growing to large size would let us use our little push into Cloud of Daggers tactic against huge enemies. And at level 13, we might be seeing a lot more huge enemies. You make the call. I'm going to go Battlemaster because, again, it looks better on the spreadsheet, letting us add those superiority dice to the damage of our attacks during our Nova round, as well as some other stuff. Because, yeah, as a Battlemaster, we learn 3 more maneuvers, and we get 4 more superiority dice to fuel them with, though these are D8s instead of the D6 we got for the fighting style, right? As for which maneuvers to take, I'd say go with Precision Attack, letting us add our superiority die to our hit chance after we roll. Maybe make a habit of, like, saving a maneuver on a hit to potentially use Precision Attack for, right? To make sure that we land a hit that's going to push them into Cloud of Daggers, against high AC targets at least. But as for the other two maneuvers that we learn, I think I'd take Brace and Riposte. Both of them give us a potential reaction attack, one when an enemy enters our reach with Brace, and the other when an enemy misses an attack against us with Riposte. I honestly don't think I've taken advantage of these two maneuvers enough in the past. I mean, think about it. If we can use our reaction to make an attack against them if they, one, move outside of our reach, like everybody else with an opportunity attack, two, move inside our reach, or three, miss an attack against us, then what's the likelihood that we're going to get a reaction attack against an enemy if we have a superiority die to spend? 50%? I tried to build around this idea, right, with the overreactor a few weeks ago, right? That's what the thumbnail looks like. We might as well get some of that benefit here too. A 50% might be too low, but I'm going to assume a 50% chance for a reaction attack on our next damage report, which is right now. Since last check, we've added Action Surge above all, more and better spell slots, more and better superiority dice, and even what I will say now is a 50% chance for a reaction attack that, yes, we could absolutely smite with. Now, we won't have advantage on that attack because the enemy shouldn't be prone at that point. And we can't Booming Blade because we're told we get to make a weapon attack with our reaction, not cast a spell. And for those of you thinking that we should have taken Warcaster so that we could Booming Blade with our reaction, right? Keep in mind that Warcaster lets us cast a spell specifically when we get to make an opportunity attack. Riposte and Brace are not, unfortunately, considered opportunity attacks, just melee weapon attacks made using our reaction. Your DM may handwave that and allow it anyways, and yeah, Warcaster is not a bad choice for us here by any means. I mean, thanks to the hands full stuff that we've talked about, and the advantage on concentration checks, maybe more importantly, right? But I just wanted to be clear on the rules. Anyways, on our Nova round now, we're making 5 attacks if you include our bonus action. We can smite with all 5 of them and could even add a superiority die to all 5, but I'm going to say let's save one, maybe the little D6 superiority die that we have, to use just in case we get a chance at a brace or a riposte, which again, I'm going to assume that we're doing 50% of the time smiting when it happens. Under those assumptions then, against an enemy with a 10 armor class, we would on average here do 256 damage during our Nova round, and against a 17 AC, it would be 238 damage. Basically doubling our damage since last check, and man, I love how well this build scales. Compared to other burst damage dealers that we've done to date, that again keeps us kind of in the middle of tier 1. Those tier 1 builds aren't messing around. They all scale really well. They wouldn't be in tier 1 otherwise. We've got some stiff competition, but not many of them can say that they've got the versatility and utility of being mostly a wizard, can they? All right, coming down the home stretch at level 14. Yeah, let's take just one more level in fighter because I really want the ability score increase or feat that's available to us there as a fighter 4. And there are a ton of options that I would love to get. The 3 front runners should probably be resilient constitution to let us add our proficiency bonus to our constitution saves, plus bump our constitution by 1. That feels super important. On the other hand, just increasing our intelligence would bump both our AC and our concentration checks by 1, anyways, when we're bladesinging, not to mention improve our wizard spells. And then, of course, there is, yeah, Warcaster, as we've discussed, which lets us Booming Blade on an opportunity attack, which would do extra damage on both the hit and immediately as they moved away from us, right? Which is what triggered the opportunity attack in the first place. Plus, give us advantage on our concentration checks, and let us cast spells with our hands full. I think Warcaster is the one that I would take above all options, as much as I'd love the other two. I will say this, though. If you can, prioritize getting a headband of intellect on this build above probably all other magic items. Also, if you did start Fighter 1, which I just might do if and when I play this character in game, and yeah, I am totally playing this character in game, then bumping intelligence here, it looks a lot more attractive to me had we started Fighter 1, right? Especially if I can't get a headband of intellect. Anyways, you make the call. At level 15, we would be a wizard 9. And yeah, you could go back to Pally here. A couple more levels would get us a feat, and it doesn't slow down our spell slot progression too much. Plus, having a Pally Oath subclass might be nice, but I feel like we've already slowed down our spells and our spell slot progression way too much as it is. You might not even have wanted to take fighter levels at all, as we've discussed, especially if you're leaning into the wizardiness of this character. But anyways, yeah, at this point, I say we go back to wizard. That's going to give us 5th level spells, and I can't in good conscience say pick your favorites here, because Wall of Force exists and provides incredible control that doesn't allow enemies to save against it. It just works and traps them behind an invisible force field, period. What about Animate Objects, some of you might be asking? Yeah, it's a good spell. A great spell, even. I think I've argued enough times over the years that the higher level we get, the worse it sort of becomes, since the damage that those animated objects do are probably going to be resisted by your enemies, as that damage is not, rules as written, considered magical, which might seem counterintuitive as the objects are animated by a magical spell, but Yeah, that's kind of how it works. Maybe not at your table. But that said, even if the enemy doesn't have resistance to the damage, then animate objects will only out-damage Cloud of Daggers at an enemy AC of 13 and lower. If they do have resistance to the damage, then yeah, it's really not worth it. Now, you might not be able to use the Cloud of Daggers shtick, and animate objects will likely be better sustained damage unless those little coins or whatever get blown up by an enemy fireball or something. But in that case, again, if the enemy has resistance, you're probably better off with Spirit Shroud for sustained damage, depending on the enemy AC and what weapons you're using. What about Steel Wind Strike? Not considered a weapon attack, so wouldn't work for smiting purposes, as cool as that would be. And yes, I know, it would work for some other things, because it is an attack, it's just a spell attack. I'll build around it one day, I think. It's just hard to do a whole build around a fifth level spell, you know? Something we won't see until very late game for some of us, or never for others, you know? Anyways, don't forget that we do get a 6th level spell slot now, thanks to multiclassing. At level 16, we would be a wizard 10, and as a bladesinger, that means we get Song of Defense, which lets us use our reaction and a spell slot to absorb damage equal to 5 times the spell slot's level that we spent. Usually, this is not as good as shield or absorb elements, but sometimes shield and absorb elements won't help us, so this is a nice defensive option to have in those cases. And then finally, for us, at level 17, we would be a wizard 11. That means 6th level spells, and again, I can't really say PYF. You've got to take mass suggestion for some encounter-ending concentration-free control, I think. Though, if our intelligence sucks, maybe we take contingency instead, so we can, like, cast Spirit Shroud on ourselves automatically when we want to without spending a bonus action for it. Or other more useful things we could do with contingency, of course. We do have a 7th level spell slot now, thanks to multiclassing, don't forget, and Booming Blade gets its final bump here to 3d8 on hit and 4d8 when the target moves. Delicioso. And so, for our final damage report, since last check, our main increases to damage have come from better spell slots, though we got that Booming Blade increase too, and we've picked up some nice defensive, utility, and control options as well. But here, against an enemy with a 10 armor class, we would on average do 312 damage, and against an 18 AC, it would be on average 292. And same as always, that's keeping us about mid-tier 1 compared to other burst damage builds at this level. Maybe the bottom half of tier 1 here, but still really solid. So let's kind of break it down here with some final thoughts. The tier score for this build, if you take the damage that they do at each of the armor classes that we report on at each of the 4 damage reports, average them all into one big number, we get a 168. And yeah, that's kind of middle of tier 1 like we've been all along, which of course is really great burst damage. So I've got a few thoughts here. First of all, I kind of feel like this build is like a compilation of all the most famous like Colby cliches that I've become known for over the last 3+ years of character builds. Bladesingers, Divine Smite, Action Surge, Trip Attack, pushing enemies into area of effect spells. I mean, the only thing that it's missing are Custom Lineage for the race or the Elven Accuracy feat, since you can't have both in the same character. Stupid Jeremy Crawford. And yeah, compiling all of my more commonly used ideas into one single character is both kind of annoying and kind of satisfying at the same time. Annoying because it feels a little rote, a little samey, but satisfying because I don't think I've ever taken all or almost all of my favorite like in-game mechanics and combined them quite so effectively into a single character before. And also, it's gratifying to combine them all in this way and see that, yeah, they work out to make a really solid character. Now, some of you may have been asking this entire video, do we really want to burn all of those spell slots and all of our superiority dice, all of our resources on one round of damage? I mean, it's easy in Baldur's Gate 3, take a drink, when we can long rest whenever we want to, right? But in D&D 5e, it's not so easy. I mean, at level 17, I was assuming a 7th level spell slot for Cloud of Daggers. That's insanity. And then 6th and 5th and 4th level spell slots all on Smite? All of our superiority dice in a single round of combat? That's stupid. And my response to you would be, hi, you must be new here. Welcome. Make yourself at home. Because yeah, that would be kind of stupid. Most of the time, anyways. I wouldn't suggest that you do this very often. Most of the time, you could get back with the Cloud of Daggers upcast at something more reasonable, maybe not smiting with your highest level spell slots, preserving those for more powerful spells, right? You don't get any additional benefit at 5th and 6th and 7th level for smites. But once in a while, maybe when you're up against a big boss, or you've got a fight that looks like it could quickly overwhelm your party, or you know you've got a long rest coming and you've been preserving your spell slots all day, you might want to go all out. And I think there's value in exploring the limits of what's possible damage-wise so that we can know what we're capable of if we need to max out, and then make decisions based on that to scale it back a bit when we don't need to go all out, right? Use one superiority die and save the rest so that you can trip 4 or 5 times in an encounter. Smite once or twice and see if that's enough to take down an enemy in a single round, saving some resources for a second enemy, etc., etc. And yeah, if you look at other burst damage builds I've done, the vast majority of them blow way too many and too valuable of resources in an over round in the same way or for the same reasons. So we're not really doing anything different here. In the end, it's not just the damage capabilities, but the damage capabilities combined with the versatility of being mostly a wizard that makes the Bladesinger my favorite subclass to play in-game. Sure, the Echo Knight build from last week could outburst this build. By a lot, actually, when they were going all out. But not only could they only reach those crazy numbers once a day too, but outside of some control potential via grappling and like some general tankiness, they didn't bring a whole lot to the table, you know? And hey, when your numbers are that big, maybe that's all you need. But with this Bladesinger pally, it's like, yeah, you can blow stuff up with the best of them, but you can also Misty Step around the battlefield, throw down some of the best control spells in game, bring buffs and utility in spades. You just have so many options at your fingertips, in addition to fantastic on-demand burst damage and strong sustained damage too, actually, that I think this one has made it to the top of my next to play list. Even though I've already done a Bladesinger in 2 separate 5e campaigns now, when it's this good and this versatile, it's hard to play anything else. So that's the build for the week. I hope you get a chance to play it sometime soon, but I also hope that you know how much I love you. You guys are so awesome. Thank you for all that you do for me, for the channel. I appreciate you so much. I hope that you have a really great day and a fantastic week. And if you don't, I really hope you'll hang in there. I hope that you will do good and be kind, and that I see you again very, very soon. But until then, take care. Bye. Secret on your lips that nobody knows. Gentle in your eyes. You can wear my clothes. You know I didn't think I'd find you perfect in so many ways. And I've been waiting, waiting, and I want to have you. I've been waiting, waiting, and I want to. Oh man, don't you love it when you've got this song, it's like so good, and you haven't heard it for like over a decade, and then it just randomly pops up on like your Spotify playlist, and it's like, not playlist, I guess, when you're just kind of letting Spotify choose, right, the next songs, and it's like, oh my gosh, Matthew Sweet off his album Girlfriend, that song, I've been waiting. Man, that takes me back. My buddy and I, my friend Bucky, one of my best friends ever, when we were in college, we used to play guitar and sing at this little sandwich coffee shop called The Dog and Duck. It was so good. Every Tuesday. And that one was on our regular set list. It's a good one. Oh, today is the first day of spring, as I'm recording this anyways. And I am feeling it. Happy. Want to get out, do some biking, do some hiking. This is gorgeous outside. I don't know about that lighting. I feel like I look a little orange. What if we went? Now the background changes from purple to blue. I can always color correct. Post-processing.
Raise your hand if you've ever wanted to combine a Bladesinger with some paladin levels in D&D.
Wait, yeah, I'm a little sweaty. It's not too bad. a saggy mic today. Again. Man, no matter how much I tighten this sometimes, you just want to sag. Stop it. Tia Matt, you're bugging me. You look a little crooked. Dang, fisheye. It's always going to look a little... whatever. Okay. Ba-da-ba-bum. Ba-da-ba-dum. Whew. The winglings. They're getting a little much. Pretty soon I'm going to be flying away. I don't know why my hair gets, like, curly, like, on the sides and in the back only. And, like, it's just kind of straight or a little wavy. Otherwise, anyways, the nearest, and I wrote that down wrong, so I need to fix it. Do-do-do-do-do. Let's see. Bloop, 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 bloop. Okay, so... Level 9. Damage report. Boop, boop. Okay. La 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 la. Booming blading to potentially use on... right? If they... Ugh. Okay. That's stupid. I think I just spit a little there. Sorry.